It's actually that first sabbatical in 1980 when I went to Stanford. Again, it was a kind of, I didn't know what I'm in for. I thought, you know, I've been to England, I've been to Germany, I've been to Australia, I've never been to the United States. And the United States is, you know, the home of psychology. That's where you have to go. And Stanford was one of the best, all the best departments at the time. And so I just thought, you know, what the hell, I need to go there. That itself is a story, because the psychologists there at that time were Lee Ross and Mark Lepper and Merrill Carlsmith, social psychologists. And I basically just wrote to them and said, you know, here I am, little guy from Sydney, I'd like to come for a sabbatical. And they either didn't reply, or they weren't interested, or they didn't know what to do with me. But the head of the department was Gordon, and he was a cognitive psychologist, and I never thought, you know, working with him. But the correspondence, I wrote to him as the chair and say, you know, could I come for a visit? After a couple of exchanges, he would write back and he said, what the hell, you know, why don't you just come and sit in with my group? So I went and sat in with his group, and it was the time when he did this mood and memory stuff. It was all new, it started publishing. But he wasn't a social psychologist, he has very broad interests, but he never thought of these as having any kind of relevance for social perception or communication or any of that. And so our collaboration basically started, I was at that time still doing social episodes and multidimensional scaling. We started talking about it, and the first study we published together, I think he had Susan Kranz, who was in education, she was involved in it, so there were the three of us. And so we designed that study to look at mood effects on person perception judgments, and it basically came out of his interest on memory, the generalization of this idea to inferences and perception and judgments, and then applying it to an interpersonal situation. And plus hypnosis, you know, he used hypnotic induction, so I had to learn hypnotic induction, and that was also an interesting.
You learned that as well?
Yes. Yeah, I did it. I was the experimenter.
As you first started to get into those studies, it seemed like you were looking at maybe some of the advantages of positive mood. It wasn't until a bit later, maybe even later into the 90s and thereafter, where you started to see some of the positive effects of negative mood. Can you talk a little about that, the shift?
Yeah, I think you can sort of subdivide this research into two major areas. The first one was looking at mood congruence, the way positive or negative mood influences the valence of your thinking, the valence of your judgment. So, you know, happy mood, you think more positive thoughts, you are more optimistic, you are more confident, and so that's a simple valence effect. And it's only maybe 15, 20 years later that the second kind of mood effect became the focus of attention in the literature, and that's the processing effects, that in addition to thinking positive or negative thoughts in positive and negative mood, in addition to that, they also change how you think, the kind of processing strategy. That has multiple roots. It partly comes out of the kind of evolutionary approach to emotions, that, you know, why do we have emotions? What's the purpose? And so a recurring thought was, well, the signals, they tell you how to deal with the challenges of the environment at this point in time. So when you're happy, it kind of, in a way, tells you it's a familiar situation, you can use pre-existing knowledge. If you experience negative mood, then the emotional reaction is usually much faster than the actual evaluation of the situation. So they're basically like little triggers to turn your thinking into one direction or another. There were multiple routes to this idea. You know, some people thought it's a motivational thing, that people in a positive mood are lazy, and that's why they're not thinking so carefully. Other people thought it's a kind of social signal. And then Fiedler and Bless, these two German guys whom I knew at Heidelberg and Mannheim, actually put it all together in this assimilation accommodation theory, which basically says, you know, positive mood promotes assimilation in the Piagetian term, using information you already have, and negative mood promotes accommodation, which is taking into account the outside world. Once we started doing those sorts of experiments, it kind of turned out that there are benefits for negative mood, which is really as you would expect, because otherwise why would we have so much of it? You know, I mean, half of psychology is about dealing with negative affect. People have a lot of negative affect. They think it's problematic, it's anhedonic, it's not happy.
Yeah.
They want to change it. So in a way, if you go a bit further, you can say, well, not so. You should kind of cherish your negative moods too when you have them.